couple kids talking, and one of the kids says, "Hey, what does your dad do for a living?" John says, "Oh, he's a magician. He performs tricks. He even cuts people in half." So his friend says, "Well, how many brothers and sisters do you have?" He says, "Well, I have 4 half-sisters and a half-brother." Today, what I want to do is I want to spend a little bit of time talking about provoking one another. And I do know that there are a few fathers here with children. I know that many of us don't. So what I want to do is I also want to try to expand it a little bit to be like pushing each other's buttons. Y'all are rather familiar with that cliche of pushing one another's buttons. Why do we do that? And more importantly, I think, though, this is specifically, you know, for the fathers, provoke not your children to wrath. I think the latter part of Ephesians and even some of what we read in chapter 6, we could pretty much pull some principles that, you know what? We also, regardless of what gender or parent or not, need to quit pushing each other's buttons. Prerequisites for biblical parenting. There is some form of a skeletal outline in the back panel of your bulletin there. It's not by secret knowledge that one parents well. You know, we looked in James many years ago that if anyone lacks wisdom, what do they have to do? Just ask God. There are many times where we view God in an unbiblical way. It's like this mystical thing about God's will. And God's will is kind of like something that he just dangles in front of us, like the proverbial carrot in front of the donkey, just to keep it going and going and going. But as we've been talking on Wednesday nights about prayer, the scripture clearly says, if you seek, you will what? Find. And if you ask, it will what? And if you knock, what's going to happen? It will be open to you. So God is not that proverbial carrot that he just keeps sticking out in front of us just to keep just in this mundane, hideous turmoil and toil as we just keep. Man, God's there to give us wisdom. And primarily the way God speaks to us today is through the Word. So good parenting, good biblical parenting skills are not necessarily some secret that some guru or Gnostics ideology, but it's just by knowing Ephesians chapters 1 through 3, 4, and 5. Let me explain it this way in chapter 3. If one would truly know the breadth, the length, the depth, the height of God's love, and they are filled with the fullness of God, do you not think that they would be a good father? Absolutely. Absolutely. The one who is strengthened with power in his inner man by God, he will be able to be a great parent. Now, as a parent, especially as a father, I must be conformed into the image of Jesus Christ. And as Ephesians 4:1 says, I need to be parenting in a way that is worthy of my calling, especially if I'm going to bring up a child in the nurture and the instruction and admonition of the Lord. So as we get a little bit here to Ephesians chapter 6, verses 1 and 3, first of all, there is obedience of the children. First point on the bulletin says the obedience of the children. But as we see there in chapter 6, verse 1, and again, all of us parents probably memorized this. This was one of the first ones we memorized. You know, we engraved it over the crib. You know, everywhere the kids looked for the first years of their life, they saw this. Children, obey your parents in the Lord. And really, there's some good parenting techniques there, because when they're this high, all they need to know is, because I said so. And as they get a little older, that doesn't work very well. And rebellion kind of, you know, when they're 15, 16, and we keep telling them because I said so, some more information is required. But when they're just, you know, knee high, why? Because I said so. So this command that children are to be obedient to their parents, it acknowledges a couple of facts. Number one, they have the capacity or the ability to obey. And sometimes I wonder about that, because even in our neighborhood, there is a child that is younger, and I can hear him screaming. in his backyard that is nowhere near my backyard, and what he is screaming is sometimes not what I would allow my kids to talk to me that way. But you kind of wonder, like, do they, some of these kids really have the capacity? And without a doubt, the answer is yes, the children have the capacity to obey. But then also with the command, it also then acknowledges that children don't automatically do it. Let me tell you, though, it is hard work. And one of the things that my daughter Stephanie said with the birth of her first child was this. She says, I never realized how selfish I was until I had children. But children are really good ways to see just how selfish we are. But moving on here, the obedience of the children. Just let me tell you a story, parents and especially fathers. You get a dog, okay? You and I, let's say we get a man. A man gets his dog. He's been wanting this dog for a while, and he spends a lot of time looking at bloodlines. You know, are they coming from Europe? Are they coming out of international? What kind of training and ribbons do the pedigree has? And we spend a lot of time researching that pedigree, and we finally buy the dog. And we buy the little dog, and of course, all the money and time it takes to feed the dog, to clean up after the dog, to repair the damage from the dog as it's going through the teething, and all that stuff that goes on it, all the trips to the veterinarian to get the puppy shots and the dog shots and all this and that and the other thing. Videos are, well, DVDs now are purchased. DVDs or videos are purposed to watch how we can train the dog and care for the dog. And YouTube videos are watched repeatedly. Books are read. PDFs are, you know, highlighted for quick reference. And boy, we're really working on this crazy dog. It's going to be a very dog that we're very proud of. Sometimes training schools, obedience schools are, you know, attended, and the dog basically then becomes a well-mannered, pleasing animal to be with. Sometimes with some whistles or just hand commands, the dog will obey, and life is good. But here's the reason I'm telling you this story. Not that I'm advocating dogs, because again, being Father's Day, some of you fathers will realize this one day, that life does not begin at conception, so some say, but life begins when the kids leave home and the dog dies. Well, we're waiting for that, Robin and I. But regardless, children, though, are supposed to obey their parents. But we're going to see in a minute, though, that parents need to take the same time and attention as they would to their career or even to a goofy dog and spend that time training their children. And trust me, that's a lot of work. It takes a lot of time and is very rarely convenient. Capital B. Verses 2 and 3. I think we see there that children are to be respectful in their attitudes. Honor your mother and father. So again, those of you that have children still at home, you need to train them that when you ask them to do something, you actually want two things from them. Okay, it'd be like this. Eric, I want you to take out the trash. He doesn't want to take out the trash. But because we kind of told our kids, if you're good, we let you live. And I'm kind of kidding with you, exaggerating just a little bit. Don't take me completely seriously here. But, you know, so Eric had to take the garbage out. But when he took the garbage out, he yanked it out of the, you know, little pantry there. He slams the pantry door. He kicks open the front door. And he kind of throws the trash halfway in the trash can. Now, he took the trash out, right? Did he honor the father or mother who told him to do it? So again, dads, as we talk to our kids and we ask them to do something, we want two things. We want action, but we want the right attitude. And again, the brilliance of this, that God, and again, I don't want to try to marginalize God, but God is absolutely, his wisdom is infinite. Because where is this child ever going to get away from authority, at least here on this planet Earth? If he constantly bucks authority, when it gets, like, let's say, fast forward 30 years, he's in the job. And yes, he does it, his boss tells him to do, but if he does it with a bad attitude, when the sales drop and the, you know, payroll is getting kind of tough, who do you think they're going to let go? The bad attitude. So again, we're not doing it to them, we're doing it for them. Alrighty. So, as we said last week, fishermen tell tales. It's what they do. But then we spun it a little bit and we said Christians tell the truth. It's what they do. And now, since it's Father's Day, guess how we're going to spin it again? Fathers rear their children. It's what they do. So let's go a little bit further here in verse 4. And ye fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath. So let's look at it at a negative way. Capital A under Roman numeral 2. Dads, you're not supposed to produce frustrated, angry, or rebellious children. And we'll talk about some ways of that in just a minute. Dads are not to produce the frustrated, angry, or rebellious children. Rather, and this is one of the things that I kept in my head as far back as I can remember, what I want to raise is not a good kid. Because trust me, there is a vast difference between a good kid and a godly kid. What I want is a godly kid. What you guys want, I mean, even those of you that maybe have grandchildren, you want grandchildren, good grandchildren, you want godly grandchildren. We want the godly side of it. So instead of provoking them to anger or frustrating them, exasperating them, which is behind that idea of wrath, we are to foster a godly servant for God. We want them to get saved, absolutely. Trust Jesus Christ as their personal Lord and Savior. Get baptized, whoo-hoo. But that's only half the battle. The other battle is 2 Corinthians 5 says, and that he died for all, that those who live should no longer live for themselves, but how? For him that died and rose again. Salvation is great, but we want service. Salvation and service working together. So, Dad, you need to bring them up. You need to bring them up has the idea of nourishing. It's also found in Ephesians 5:29, where men nourish and cherish their bodies. We fathers are to nourish and cherish those children. And by the way, as you see it even in your English, it is a present tense verb. Nurture, bring them up in this nurture. It could even be training, education, or discipline. Training, education, nurture, or discipline. And the admonition is basically comes from this Greek word of placing before the mind. This is, again, maybe a little bit of explanation. The reason we don't do this on is because God says. The reason we don't do this on is because this isn't going to play out well in life. You're not going to be able to get a job if you sleep in every day till noon. You're going to have a harder life if you keep hitting that snooze. I mean, you're going to have a very hard life if you don't learn the biblical work ethic. So we keep putting these things in front of our kids' minds. That's that idea of admonition or instruction or correction. So dads, what plan are you using to promote the spiritual health of your children? When during the day do you focus and set some time to train up your children? There's many resources, and there's many more resources than even 30 years ago when Eric was born. There's a lot of good resources, and if you're looking for some ideas or some resources to help you in the rearing of godly servants, man, contact us. For the rest of us, in the time remaining, I want to talk about, on a negative aspect, how do we provoke one another? Or dads, how do we sometimes provoke our children to wrath? This is going to be kind of the negative side of it. In the growth groups, I've got 6 or 8 questions for the guys, and they're going to be looking at it from a positive standpoint. I have 7 questions, 7 talking points, and we're going to look at this from a positive side in the next hour. But for right now, how do we sometimes provoke our children to wrath, or how do we push each other's buttons? So let's talk about that a little bit. When we abuse them physically, pushing, shoving, the slapping, this is when one allows the emotions to get out of control. There is a situation. It's embarrassing. It is inconveniencing us. Something that we hold more precious than our child was broken. And as a result of it, there's this emotion that just gets out of control, and it is unfortunately physically expressed. And there's so many questions that we could ask, like, why is this so wrong? And there's many ideas there, but we'll continue on as we talk about it from a positive aspect in the next hour. How do we abuse our children? Well, it's when we do it psychologically. And since we've covered communication here not many weeks ago in Ephesians 4, let's just put it on the table today that from now on, there is no more yelling, screaming, hollering, swearing, cursing at home. Amen? Okay, no more of that. We've already covered that a few weeks. You've had some time to think through it. We talked about it in growth groups a couple weeks ago. Let's just get it on the table. No more of that. We are not going to do it anymore. Done. Good. Next one. Here's another one, though. When we neglect them physically with our touch, when we neglect them emotionally with our words, when we neglect them spiritually, that we don't pray with them, we don't read the Bible with them, we don't really ask them how they're dealing with life and what God is doing in their life, and we abuse them relationally, and we really don't spend time with them. And the power of the touch, even in churches like us, is very important. I guess we hugged when you got off the airplane at the airport, or when you got home, I didn't pick you up. But we hugged and all kind of stuff. My daughter, you know, we hug and all that kind of stuff. And we did it for many years. But what really surprised me is my daughter went away to college, and she was in a very conservative, Bible-believing school, and she was appalled by the number of girls, so out of high school, what, 18 to 21 years old, who have never been hugged by their father. Or many of them who never heard, I love you. I am proud of you. And they just don't hear those words. So there's many ways in which we neglect them physically with touch. Hug them. We need to emotionally meet their needs with the word, spiritually, relationally. When we don't understand them, and again now, I know I've referenced the fathers a little bit, and I understand that probably two-thirds or more of us don't have children at home, but what about your wife? Do you neglect her when you go home? Do you hug her? You kiss her. Those of you with your parents, honor your mother and father. That's a fun one to talk about. When they get older, when they're kind of in dementia, how do we do that? How does that look? In our workplace, how do we kind of provoke our coworkers to wrath? So forgive me for saying fathers a lot. There's many ways that we can expand this to our friends and our relatives and our coworkers. So what about when we don't understand them? You got your lab mate, you got your cubicle mate that you're with all the time, you've got your neighbor, you got your friend. Do you understand them? Do you know where they're coming from? Can you tell me today of someone that you love who is near to you? Could you today, in order to leave the building, tell me that person whom you love, what their greatest fear is? What is their greatest fear? Someone that you really love, your BFF, your best friend forever. You know what I'm saying? Could you leave here, or would you have to, like, take up residence? Could you tell me what is their greatest fear? Sometimes when we judge them solely on externals, and this sometimes is a toughie. Jesus said it in Matthew 16, verse 26, and I'm taking it a little bit out of context, but he said, you know, what will it profit a man if he gain the whole world and lose his own soul? And what will a man give in exchange for his soul? And sometimes we, and I'm going to talk to parents for just a minute, it is more important to make the soccer team than to be nurtured and trained in the ways of God. It is more important to make the fine arts, music, play, drama, and we'll give all kinds of time to that than we will for the things of God and the church. We have to push them to be successful in life and push them to get in at least second tier, if first tier schooling, so that they can get a lot of job and then pay me when I get into retirement years. But we push for the externals. But what about their soul? What about their hearts? Is that as important to us as it is for them to make straight A's, summa, magnum, cum laude, or to get the fellowship, or to get the grant, or to get, where's the things of God? And again, when we judge them solely on performance, oh my goodness, me, I wasn't a high achiever in basically anything I did other than getting in trouble when I was a teenager. So if my dad was going to judge me solely on performance, I'd be judged, but in kind of a negative way. So don't judge someone by externals, their beauty, their intelligence. Here's again, for those of you that do have children at home, when they get a little older, you need to have them put together a list of what they're looking for a spouse. I'm looking for six packs. But anyway, what do we look for in a spouse? Physique, beauty, the way they paints their eyes and does their hair. Is that going to last in 33 years of marriage? Or is there something else that they should be looking for? So even with our children, we need to be teaching them, don't judge someone by externals. Don't be looking at externals. Find out inner qualities. Here's another one. Number six, when we're not willing to admit our mistakes. And this is again, to show just how stupid we are. The Bible says it, but also some of the leadership books that I've read, is this. If you and I do, here, let's use me. If I make a big mistake here on Sunday morning, of what profit is it going to be for me not to say anything the next week and say, hey, guys, I really blew it last week. Will you forgive me? Are you guys going to have amnesia between this Sunday and the next Sunday? You all know it. I mean, it's like this big elephant in the room that everyone's not going to try to look at and talk at, but is there. But why is it then that we oftentimes are so unwilling to admit mistakes to our family members, to our coworkers, to our spouses, to our neighbors, to our loved ones? Like they all of a sudden got amnesia? They know you made the mistake. But again, sin does reduce us to fools, so just admit it. Creating too many rules, being inconsistent. Robin, I, and Eric, we took off and we went up and saw Joseph, and I was just once again reminded of the absolute devastating power of favoritism, or in the workplace, nepotism, or other ways we see this expressed. If you have one set of rules for a certain amount of workers, maybe the guy workers and the girl workers, you know, because they bat their eyes or they cry, they have another standard. That ain't going to work very well. Maybe for the girls. I guess being a guy, it's not going to be. Different rules for the sons and daughters. Here's another one that sometimes we run into, dads. We have more stricter rules for the older ones, and when the younger ones come up, we just give them a free ride because we're too tired to parent them anymore. Let's not do that. Let's have the same rules. Here's another one. When we correct in anger. But again, in a way, we've already removed this one because hopefully you've taken what I said and it's on the table. We are not hollering, screaming, yelling, cursing, swearing anymore. It's no longer acceptable in our house. So we're not going to be disciplining in anger. We're going to view anger as a tool to help make them a better individual. We're going to do it for them. Not to them. James 1:19 says we need to be swift to hear, slow to speak, and slow to wrath. When we don't allow for harmless mistakes, and let's just do this in relationships real quick. How many of you ever take lists to grocery stores or Walmart or Target? Anybody ever take lists? Some of you do. Those of you who don't take lists, do you ever forget some of the stuff that you went to get? Okay, now those of you who do even take lists, do sometimes you forget what's on the list? So when I come home and I forget the milk, oh yes, because we're such big milk drinkers. So I come home and we're unloading everything, and I've been to Walmart, I've been to Target, I've been to CVS, I filled her gas up with car, I did everything, and as we're unloading everything, she says, "Where's the milk?" And I go, "Oh, I forgot it." Woo! Duck and run. Boom! What? You forgot the milk? I need the milk. I'm going to make pancakes for Eric in the morning. And how could you forget the milk? Why are you laughing? I see no humor in this. Whew. Well, then I lovingly would say, "Honey, 2 days ago, didn't I ask you to stop at Staples and buy me some staples?" She would say, "Oh. But you know, it's kind of like throwing the first stone. You know, those of you who never commit any harmless mistakes, go ahead and jump down the throat of those who commit harmless mistakes." But why do we do that? It's not like, "Oh, Dan, I thank you for filling my car. Oh, Dan, you saved me so much time going to Target and Redner's and CVS and Sam's and Walgreens. And you got all this stuff for me. Oh, Dan, I'm so much in your debt. Please, what could I make for you?" It ain't that. It's duck and run. The milk! You forgot. But you know what I'm saying? You're going to exasperate people when you don't allow for harmless mistakes. We're not perfect. You're not perfect. Why do we expect perfection from them? Here's another one. And it's not just so much in the home. Ever been around friends, maybe at a restaurant, and they accidentally grab the wrong fork, and it's usually something very little because they're full of bitterness, and you're paying a bunch of money to go to a restaurant to eat with them, and something little happens, and all of a sudden, you have tableside entertainment, as they are just now sparring at each other and the emotions, and like, what do I do? Like, I think I got to go wash my hands, or, man, we already ordered, it's too late to leave. But have you ever been in that situation where you've been around friends and they start fighting with each other and just like, wow, that's awkward? Well, it's also awkward within the home. So why do we do that? And we'll talk about that in the next hour. Why do we exasperate our children? Why is it that we sometimes constantly look for fault? What about Philippians 4:8? "Finally, brethren, whatsoever things are..." Anybody got any ideas about all those adjectives down there? "Whatsoever things are pure, true, honest, lovely, good report, virtuous, praiseworthy..." And then get the command, "Think on these things." But why is it that we are always looking for their fault? Why is it at work? And I understand we have to qualify that a little bit. But why is it that the boss is always noticing the wrong? It could be the wrong just cost him $25,000. So it's qualified a little bit. But why is it that we as human beings oftentimes want to just focus in on fault and be so critical of others? And last but not least is when we compare them to others. And this is how it sounds very destructive in relationships. It would be something like this. You know, the pastor does, how come you don't? The pastor's wife does, how come you don't? Or what's even worse than that is, you know, Robin, my mother used to make pancakes without milk. My mother used to do it this way. You know, Robin, your pancakes are pretty good, but my mother, oh, she could make pancakes that were so light you had to put syrup on them or they'd float up off the plate. And some of you ladies, your blood pressure is already starting to get up. Because maybe you maybe heard a hint of that or two or three. You know, I just wish you were like my coworker. You know, I wish you were like at work. When I go to work, we don't have this drama. I love going to work. Work is so nice, and then I come home to, well, you. And again, with the children, it's the same thing. You know, you got a kid up there and he's trying to smack a ball and he's trying to smack that ball. And of course, you've been too busy to show him for hours how to hit the ball. But he's up there and he's swinging like he's golfing or something. I don't know, there's a bee or something. And he strikes out. And then you say, you know, son, I wish you would just hit like. But we do it all the time, whether we're comparing our spouses, whether we're comparing our siblings, whether we're comparing our coworkers. You know, honey, there's this gal at work. She takes care of herself. She looks sharp. And I come home and I find you in sweats and a t-shirt. You know, instead of pushing each other's buttons, why not embrace Ephesians 4:32 of being kind, tender-hearted, and forgiving one another? There is a responsibility for all of us in our many relationships to either witness to them or to show the power of God in their lives. Ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord.